Right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Tom Horn. It's a very interesting discussion about the abdication, of course, of the Pope. We're also talking about Petrus Romanus, the prophecy of the final Pope, and the larger picture, basically, of what all of this means, tying it into the new book, Exo Vaticana, Tom Horn. It's very interesting. I want to ask you, Tom, if you heard, this is back in 2011 now, but I couldn't help to notice of it because I actually just heard about it a few days ago. On January 28th, there was a UFO sighting over the Dome of the Rock, the Temple Mount. It was filmed and everything. Very difficult to determine if it was the real deal or whatnot. But what was interesting to me was that just a few days after this sighting, after this was videotaped, apparently a few week old baby was found actually abandoned in the Dome of the Rock on the Temple Mount. Did you hear about this?
I heard about it. I honestly don't know very much about it. But frankly, the connection between UFOs and that kind of activity with the Vatican is quite astonishing. In fact, I would encourage you, if you get a chance, to interview my author, Chris Putnam, who spends a great deal of time in this new book documenting the connection between Rome and UFOs. And when there are changes of pontiffs, there also seems to be the appearance of these UFOs, and he raises some very astonishing questions around it. In fact, the cover of our book, which shows these UFOs coming in and shooting a beam down on the top of St. Peter's Basilica, which is interesting in light of the lightning that struck.
That's right, yeah.
But there actually is a reason around why that cover was designed the way it was based on some of the research that he's done. So this would not surprise me. I did hear about the story, but I don't know anything about it.
It's just like we're in times right now of it's like a movie, you know. It's like it's that has that Antichrist kind of feel to it. And again, whether this is theatrics or where it's the real deal, I don't know, and I can't be able to determine that at this point. But nonetheless, it doesn't matter. The world is swept away in all of this, and decisions are made consequently. And I just want to know a little bit more about the alien connection that you were talking about, Tom, and what you think will happen in terms of how this will unfold. I mean, are we talking about something like, was it Arthur C. Clarke's novel, the End of Childhood, whatever it was called? I mean, is that the future scenario that we're looking at, where Rome gets in bed with some, aliens with superpowers, at least from our perspective, and you know, starting to rule the Earth from that perspective? What do you think we're in for here, Tom?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because that came up on a show I did with Steve Quayle on Hagman & Hagman just a few nights ago, and I doubt that you listened to that show, but that very book, Childhood's End, came up, and of course it's a discussion about these leathery winged little horn barbed tailed overlords.
Yeah.
You know, and what it turns out to be, even the way he wrote the book, if you read it, the way he wrote the book, he's telling us that these are the demons. This is Satan and his demons from history. But we had it all wrong. They're not the bad guys. They're the good guys, and
right,
they're going to help us set up a utopia here on Earth. But let me tell you why. Here's what happened. We did a show with you last year, and we did one with Steve Quayle and some other ones, all at the same time, all within probably a one-week period. And in those shows, we were talking about the prophecy of the popes, and I don't know how well your show did, but I know the ones we did with Steve shot it to the number one blog talk show in the world for 1 week. But then, a week or two later, we came back, and we did a show on the Vatican ET connection, and that shot those shows to the number one shows in the world for something like 2 months, 6 weeks to 2 months. And it showed us that the world has a very strong interest in the Vatican extraterrestrial connection and some of the stuff that some of, like Father Jose Funes and others, had been saying in the public, what they'd been saying to media, seemed to be indicating that there was something deeper going on in Rome involving their theology, but maybe even more than their openness now to science, maybe they knew something, right, that the rest of the world didn't know.
Yep.
And so what Chris Putnam and I decided to do was to start a second investigation that's connected to Petrus Romanus, but it really picks up this question of the Vatican extraterrestrial connection, and what role would Petrus Romanus, as the final pope, what role might he play in either preparing the world for or accommodating an official disclosure moment. Because if you wake up tomorrow morning and gigantic mile-wide ships are hovering over Washington, D.C. and the Vatican and all the rest of it, the first thing on the religious world's mind is going to be, what does this mean?
Yeah.
Is this God? Are these our creators? Are these demons? Is this deception? I mean, it's going to literally paralyze the world. And it makes sense that the Vatican, as representing the largest percentage of professing Christians in the world, and not just that, they're different than other churches. They have their own ambassadors to whatever it is, 100 different countries. I mean, let's face it, no other religious organization, Christian organization on the earth has the political power or ramifications and associations that the Vatican does. So it just makes sense, right?
Yeah.
That they're going to be the ones who are going to walk out into the well of the United Nations with the president of the United States and Russia and all the rest of them when they make the announcement, ladies and gentlemen, we have an announcement to make, we are in contact. Or we have an announcement to make, those ships hovering over your head, you know, XYZ. What is it they're going to say? So here's what we did. After we got together, we assembled our team, and we said, how could we deal with this in a way that it's never been dealt with before? Not just another book, right?
Right.
On UFOs and whatever. I mean, how could we really deal with this? How can we really get to the bottom line between what the Vatican's astronomers and theologians are over the last 4 to 5 years, especially, the stuff that they're saying, the public comments that they're making about this being our space brothers, and they might be morally superior, closer to God than we are, children of God. How can we get behind that? What is it that they're really thinking? So here's what happened. We decided to start our investigation by going to the Vatican's Astronomical Technology Telescope. Now, we had to do this through the University of Arizona. We had to get permission. The University of Arizona oversees what happens there. But we were going there not with just astrobiology questions. We were going there with theology questions concerning high-level Vatican astronomers and the stuff they'd been leaking to the media. Comments like, and I'll use Jesuit priest Guy Cosmonogo because he's the one who also afterward gave us 5 different interviews from Rome. He's a leading astronomer. He turns up in media as a spokesman for the Vatican. He's worked at NASA. He's taught at Harvard. He's taught at MIT. He currently splits his time between the Vatican Observatory and Laboratory, the Spicola Vaticana, which is headquartered at the summer residence of the Pope in Castel Gandolfo, Italy. He splits his time between there, and you'll see him in media. In fact, when the Pope resigned, the media kept running this picture of the Pope handing Cosmonogo some papers, and I don't know what that was about, but that was the image they were using in the background of the story. He's the guy that oversees the Vatican's collection of asteroids and all that there in Italy, but he splits his time between there and Mount Graham in Arizona. And over the last few years, he, among some of the others, been focusing a lot of time in attempting to reconcile science and religion in public forums, the media and whatever, specifically as it relates to the subject of extraterrestrial life and its potential impact on the future of faith as we have known it. And so we decided to contact him following, and I could, if you want me to talk about the trip to Mount Graham, I can do that.
Tom, you're talking about the Lucifer Observatory, right? Isn't that where you went then?
Well, some people are calling it the Lucifer Observatory. So let's be clear.
Okay.
On Mount Graham is the Mount Graham International Observatory. That consists of 3 telescopes. There is the Large Binocular Telescope, which right now is still the largest of its kind in the world, though there's a new one being built that'll be even bigger, I think, in Europe. Right now it's the biggest one of its kind. It's an optical telescope. Between it and the Vatican's Astronomical Telescope is another telescope, a submillimeter telescope, a radio telescope, that observes the heavens in the submillimeter wavelength range. And then to the opposite side of that is the Vatican's Advanced Technology Telescope, or VAT. Now, the Lucifer device is inside the Large Binocular Telescope. It's not inside the Vatican Telescope. It's inside the Large Binocular Telescope. But the whole mountain, all 3 telescopes, fall under the canopy of the Mount Graham International Observatory, and any of these astronomers can use each other's devices, if that makes any sense.
Mm, yeah, sure.
Okay, so the Lucifer device is inside the Large Binocular Telescope. It's mounted between the focal points of the LBT's two giant. I'm not sure. I think, you know, in the film trailer that we have out there right now advertising the upcoming book, it shows pictures of me and Chris Putnam in our tour that we took there with the Jesuit and technical advisor who works for the LBT, who spent most of the day with me and Chris. It shows pictures of us standing above the Lucifer device, him pointing it out. But we were there all day. They spent hours. We had access to everything. In fact, we were amazed at how much access they were willing to give us.
That's
and
nice.
they explained the Lucifer instrument. This observes in the near-infrared wavelength range.
Yeah.
And the importance of infrared is that it can detect objects that are too far away or faint to be observed in visible light, like distant planets, nebula, brown dwarf stars. It has longer wavelengths than visible light. That means it can pass through astronomical gas and dust without being scattered, and so on. So objects and areas that are obscured from view in the visible spectrum can be observed by Lucifer, the infrared technology. And, for example, UFO researchers, you know, they've fascinated for some time how infrared can be used to spot and track unidentified flying objects in the heavens that otherwise don't even turn up.
That's right.
On these other telescopes. In fact, some of the most astonishing UFOs ever caught on film. And you can watch some of these on YouTube if you just go over there and just type in infrared UFO. You'll see some stuff there NASA, before they shut down their infrared telescope, I can't remember what they call it, but anyway, they were shooting film. That's where the giant miles-wide pulsating UFOs were being filmed, and some guy that had a small television show, maybe in Portland, Oregon, or Canada or something, was throwing those up online, so NASA shut it down because they didn't want people to see. Really, they didn't want people to see these enormous pulsating UFOs. They look actually like the old Europa disks that the ancients made, including the little notch that's cut out on one side of the Europa disk, look identical to these ships that are filmed in infrared.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, on the connection between the Vatican's astronomical telescope and the Lucifer device, there's a curious description, first of all, on the Vatican Observatory website concerning the Lucifer device. Actually, under the heading, and the heading's kind of long, but here's what it says: NASA and the Vatican's infrared telescope called Lucifer, a German-built, NASA and the Vatican-owned and funded infrared telescope for looking at Nibiru Nemesis, end quote.
Mm.
Now, why the Vatican Observatory website has allowed that caption to remain on their website is curious because, as you know, Nibiru and Nemesis, these are planets that return in orbit. Are they watching them, approaching the Earth? I mean, who knows why they've left that
up? There have been rumors about this for years, Tom, but what you're saying is that this is actually a caption now that still is on their website to describe what it's capable of doing, the telescope.
That's actually the caption that is on the Vatican's observatory website.
Wow.
So that's astonishing. Mm. We provide a picture of that because we figure they're going to take it down now that we're talking about it publicly. So we screen captured their website. We put a picture of it in our book. But of course, these you know, that's been connected with Planet X.
Sure. Yeah.
More darkly than that, it's been connected with the destruction of planets that some people believe occurred when there was a great war between God and Lucifer in the remote past. When this powerful angel was cast out of heaven. And in fact, in the book of Job, where the prophet details how God destroyed the literal dwelling places of the angels that made insurrection against him, it specifically mentions the destruction of Rahab, which is a planetary body that was also known in ancient times as Pride, from which God drove the fugitive snake. So the question is, and this was part of the investigation, are Rome and other world powers using the Lucifer device on Mount Graham where we went, are they using that to observe something that the rest of us are unaware of?
Yeah.
And something that they believe maybe represents that ancient war, or maybe something worse than that. They're keeping eye on something that's approaching the Earth. And as you might remember, that was something Father Malachi Martin said Mount Graham was being used for. When Art Bell asked him some years ago why the Vatican was so invested in the study of deep space on Mount Graham in southeastern Arizona, Malachi Martin said it's because at the deepest levels of the Vatican infrastructure, they know what's approaching the Earth and that it will be of the utmost importance in the future. So Malachi Martin said that a long time ago. Interestingly, we asked Guy Cosmonolgo what he thought about Malachi Martin and his comments, and he seemed to be actually perturbed by the man, and he gave us some very negative comments that we also are going to publish. But one other thing, because people listening to your show, there might be some of them that are going to say, now wait a minute, the Jesuits didn't have one thing to do with the naming of the Lucifer device.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't point out is how they have access to using it, plus they're an integral part of the whole complex at Mount Graham International Observatory, and as such, they're connected to the very consortium, the German astronomers that did name Lucifer, and who are part of the odious Max Planck Institute, which is a group that gave assistance to the murderous experiments of the Nazis under Dr. Mengele in the 1940s. Also, in our interview with Guy Cosmonolgo, he told us that the VORG, the Vatican organization up there that studies deep space, he said that they have a Jesuit point man in the search for alien planets or observing alien planets, and that he uses the Lucifer device. In fact, here's a brief quote out of what he said to me, which he sent to me in writing. Quote, as it happens, one of us, Father Paul Gabor, just finished his PhD thesis work at the Paris Observatory on designing an instrument for a proposed European Space Agency spacecraft mission to search for exoplanets, but his work was in optics, not biology. He just moved to Tucson, Arizona, and is developing collaborations with those at the University of Arizona, end quote. So, based on Cosmonolgo's statement, the VORG, the Vatican's observatory, they have a well-placed insider in the Large Binocular Telescope project through their association with the University of Arizona, and through him, they are actively using the Lucifer instrument. So for me, it doesn't make any difference who named it. The fact is that they're all part of the same consortium, and they're all using it.
In your opinion, Tom, when you look at all this and the research that you've done and the things that are unfolding now, and we can divide it up if you want to, but do you have a sense that all of this is a deception at the highest level, that all of this is theatrics and it's even instigated to a certain degree by the Vatican? Maybe that's for political agendas or what have you, but what do you think?
What do you mean?
Well, if we look at the... what is happening now with the prophecies of the Pope, that this might be the last one, with the potential advent of the Vatican announcing alien life, etc. Do you think that this is a deception at the root of it, or is this really what's going on, if you know what I mean?
There is a level of deception. There was two things, and they almost seem to be contradictory. One thing, we were amazed at how open the Jesuits were to talking with us, the material that they provided us for our book, the fact that they, I would almost use the term warmly embraced, excuse me, us at Mount Graham, spent the whole day, altogether probably 14 hours, all day, gave us access to everything, lots of stuff that you can't see in that little 3-minute movie trailer, in which we went into their observation rooms, we looked at their computer systems, anything we asked, they explained. And one thing that actually shocked us was how openly they talk about tracking UFOs in the heavens, almost like it's boring it happens so much. Honestly.
Wow.
And we didn't just get that from the Jesuits, we also got that from the Large Binocular Telescope and the systems engineer who at the end, I have some pictures I could send you of us sitting in the control room there, which is massive because that's a monster of a telescope, talking about how people earn the right to be able to use the telescope. So let's say you're a professor, you're working at a large university, you write a paper, and the paper somehow, you know, is going to wind up in some kind of peer-reviewed journal or something, and so you apply to have some time to be able to use the telescope, and that time is granted to you. Well, when you come there, you're on a specific mission, and you only have so much time to use it to try to study a part of space that you happen to be writing some university-level material about. And he was talking about how often they have to make themselves not get distracted by the fact that as they're studying some part of deep space, these UFOs appear.
Yeah.
And we have him on film telling us this while we're sitting there, and we're just astonished that it's just almost blasé to them to talk about how often these things appear. In any case, I kind of got off. You asked me about Rome using it. One thing we found out about you asked me about deception.
Yeah.
And while they were that open to talking about us, I can also tell you that once Guy Cosmalgo in particular, once he knew who we were and what we were doing and what our investigation was about, he kept talking to us, but then his answers were very short, yes, no, and very evasive. And at some points, even argumentative. I mean, then he became very defensive of some of the material he had already provided us. Now, on the upside, before he became defensive, he sent us a copy of a private PDF. We're providing it free with the release of our book. And it's a gold mine of what he and the Vatican are considering regarding the ramifications of astrobiology, and specifically the discovery and announcement of the discovery of extraterrestrial intelligence. And in this, he admits that these creatures he's talking about are those that society will likely look to soon to be the saviors of humankind.
Really?
So, yeah, that's right.
Wow.
And then to illustrate the theological soundness of that possibility, he astonished us even further in that he argued that humans, not only are they not the only intelligent beings in the universe, but he says these non-human life forms are described in the Bible. And then because when he says that, we said, well, where are they described in the Bible? He points to two things. One, he says the angels, but then he surprises us by something else. He points us directly to the Nephilim.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm going to quote you here what he sent me. Hmm. Can I?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Tom.
Quote, other heavenly beings come up several times in the Psalms. For example, look at the beautiful passage in Psalms 89 that calls out, let the heavens praise your wonders, O Lord, your faithfulness in the assembly of the holy ones. For who in the skies can be compared to the Lord? Who among the heavenly beings is like the Lord? The heavens are yours, the earth also is yours, the world and all that is in it, you have founded them. Now that's a quote from the Bible, and then he follows. Likewise, God asks Job, and this is from Job 38:7, if any man can claim to have been around at the creation when the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy. Now here's what he says. Are these heavens, holy ones, those in the sky, the morning stars, heavenly beings, is there more to it than references to angels? Or do they refer to some other kind of life beyond our knowledge? These are not the only non-human intelligent creatures mentioned in the Bible. Now, Henrik, this is where, for me, and you know my background with the work I've done on writing books on the Nephilim and
sure.
the giants and yep. genetics and all the rest of it, this is where this really got me. This knocked me over. He says, there is also that odd, mysterious passage at the beginning of Genesis chapter 6 that describes the sons of God taking human wives. With it is a frustratingly oblique reference to the Nephilim, the heroes that were of old, warriors of renown. Most biblical scholars suggest that the Nephilim and the sons of God in Genesis can be explained away as a leftover reference to the creation stories of the pagans who surrounded ancient Israel, that they were written by the kind of people whose culture saw anyone not of my tribe as being unspeakably alien. Likewise, the reference to heavens and stars singing and praising the Lord can be seen simply for the beautiful poetry that it is. But Whether you interpret these creatures as angels or aliens doesn't really matter for the sake of our argument here. The point is that the ancient writers of the Bible, like all ancient peoples, were perfectly happy with the possibility that other intelligent beings could exist. End quote. This just knocked me over, because you have to ask yourself, did the Vatican's top astronomer actually mean to use the story of the Nephilim from the Bible as an example in response to our question about the kind of space saviors, because that's what they're talking about, who we would soon look to for salvation? Well, Henrik, that incredible assertion was only topped by what he then told us. Then, in quoting John 10:16, which says, "And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and they shall be one fold and one shepherd," end quote. Cosmonolgo says, perhaps it's not so far-fetched to see the second person of the Trinity, the Word, who was present in the beginning, coming to lay down his life and take it up again, not only as the Son of Man, but also as a child of other races, end quote. And so I had to email him back and say, do Vatican scholars, based on what you just said, do they actually believe that Jesus might have been the star child of an alien race? Do you, Cosmonolgo, do other Jesuits, do they secretly hold that the virgin birth was in reality an alien abduction scenario in which Mary was impregnated by E.T., giving birth to a hybrid Jesus? And that he did not answer. He would not answer. But others, we took what they had already given us and some of the papers that have been written, some of which have been published, some of which haven't even yet been published, but these are written by Opus Dei-level theologians that are working at the highest levels of academia, in Catholicism, who have given us what would seem like impossible theology if it wasn't for their position, their high-ranking positions. And these are people who study, by the way, the local Indians call Mount Graham the star base.
Interesting.
We're talking about Dr. Christopher Corbally, the vice director of the Vatican Observatory Research Group on Mount Graham until just 2012, till this last year. Who believes that our image of God is going to have to change now, as ET life is confirmed by scientists, including the fact that we're going to have to evolve away from this concept of an anthropocentric God into a broader entity, an entity that does not just represent us intelligent, Star Trek God, a God that represents all the life on all the various planets.
Sure.
Father Funes goes equally far. The L Observatory Romano actually published a paper by him that the public could read, that was kind of a scratch on the surface of the kind of Catholic doctrine that we're talking about now. Anyway, I could go on and on, but just look for, I'm going to send you the PDF as soon as I get it.
Excellent. Well, it's very interesting. Go ahead. Finish the thought, Tom.
Well, just we're talking, this is bigger than Petrus Romanus. This book's probably going to be 700 pages, probably 1,000 authoritative references, all kinds of documents and pictures. And then, because there's too much to put in a book, when we release Exo Vaticana, we're putting together on two DVDs, literally dozens and dozens, tens of thousands of pages of documents and information that we're going to make free with the book itself. That's how broad this whole investigation has been.
Now, let me ask you this. It might be a difficult question, of course, to answer, but I want to get your just take on it. What do you think? Because there's two different scenarios, as I see it here, anyway. And one is that if there is a plan to announce ET openly and publicly, and again, whatever they are, if they're really ETs, if they're demons, if they are Nephilim, whatever they are, one scenario is that the Vatican are basically passive onlookers to this. They really have an idea. They have a hunch about what's going on. They're currently investigating it, but they're not, if you will, pulling any strings necessarily. They're passive onlookers, or they are actually already in communication with these ET already, and actually very, very carefully are planning how to do this, when to do it, if even you mentioned astrotheology before, even when the stars are aligned, you know, in the right place to do all of this. Do you think that they're passive, don't really know what's going on, but they're curious, or are they really more involved in than that? What do you think, Tom?
Well, based on the research that we've done, I think it's both, in the sense that some of them are in the know and some of them are not. But it's the ones who are in the know that are saying things that are shocking. And you have to go back, really, basically, just the last decade, where things suddenly seem to start changing. The Vatican's ramping up its production of science and theology studies. You can see this. November 2009, they convene a five-day study week on astrobiology at the summer residence of the Pope on the grounds of the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, where some of this theology is coming from, during which astronomers, scientists from countries around the world joined these prominent churchmen specifically on this question to evaluate the origin of life, the evolution of life on Earth, and also the prospects of life and the occurrence of life on other planets. Now, whether any discussion was held at that time concerning the Lucifer device and what it might be monitoring in deep space from atop Mount Graham, whether that was happening is unknown because those meetings were private. But what was interesting, and it might have been a coincidence, was just 3 months later, 90 days later, January 2012, the Royal Society, the National Academy of Sciences for the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth, they hosted representatives from NASA, the European Space Agency, the United Nations Office for Outer Space Affairs, and all these people came together, and they did to discuss what was officially labeled the detection of extraterrestrial life and the consequences for science and industry. And Lord Martin Rees, who was the president of the Royal Society at that time and the Royal Astronomer, talked about aliens staring us in the face in a form that humans can't recognize without proper equipment. Other speakers there talked about overwhelming evidence. Others talked about unprecedented proof. Others talked about the danger of exposing ourselves to these intelligences. But they did all of this, and even their own press releases repeat the language I'm using, that they were doing this because they were saying we're close to making irrefutable disclosure of alien life. Well, that had the Vatican spokespeople in the news again, and this time they were being even more candid regarding the future of the church and Jesuit preparations to accommodate a dynamic ET reality. Well, don't forget that in the lead-up to the Vatican-sponsored conference 90 days earlier, the El Observatorio Romano, which is the official media voice for the Vatican, interviewed Father Gabriel Funes, and he's also an astronomer. He's the director of the Vatican Observatory now, and he made it clear that accepting the reality of intelligent aliens not only does not contradict the Catholic faith, but that in fact to believe otherwise is the real heresy, as it puts limits on God's creative freedom. And I'm going to tell you, that has everything in the world to do with a forthcoming papal proclamation about life on other planets, and people will know that they heard it here first, right?
Yep.
There's an attorney by the name of Daniel Sheehan. He worked for 10 years as the general counsel to the United States Jesuit headquarters in Washington, D.C. Have you ever interviewed him?
Never have, no.
He would be a person to talk to now because he said that Funes' explicit statement that disbelief in extraterrestrial intelligence, that it puts limits on God's creative freedom, was code talk for those who are in the know, for those who know something's coming.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he was speaking, what do they call this, El Sato or whatever it is, beneath the voice.
Yeah.
He was speaking in a way that those who get it do and the others who aren't supposed to get it wouldn't. And what Sheehan said was, on the face of it, the statement might not have seemed like much of an important statement, but what was unbeknownst to the non-Catholic world was that Father Funes' specific choice of words tracks precisely the exact wording of the key aspects of the official Catholic Church edict that was issued in 1277 by Bishop Tempierre, the Bishop of Paris, in which the Catholic Church had officially condemned St. Thomas Aquinas' theological proposition, what's known as Proposition Number 34, in which Aquinas had publicly asserted that the first cause, meaning God, cannot possibly have created other worlds. Well, Proposition 34 was the official condemnation by the Catholic Church against that statement on the specific grounds that it seemed to put limits on God's creative freedom. The precise words that were deliberately used by Father Funes in 2008 in the lead-up to their conference on astrobiology, which was then followed by the other conference. In fact, let me read something to you here. Can I?
Yeah, sure. Sure, go ahead, Tom.
Because here's what he goes on to explain why the reassertion of this theological position by Roman Catholic leaders is very important. Here's what he says. The fact that these precise words were chosen by the official Jesuit director of the Vatican Observatory to announce the new official policy of the Roman Catholic Church, acknowledging the likelihood of the existence of extraterrestrial life elsewhere in the universe, is understood by those of us who are familiar with such matters to be no mere coincidence. It may indeed prove to be of extraordinary importance. For this specific 1277 Catholic edict that condemned Proposition 34 of Thomas Aquinas is deemed by church authorities and by secular historians alike to have been the action which opened the plurality of worlds debate in Western civilization, which led directly to the removal of Earth from the center of the universe 400 years ago. Now listen to what he says. And these words may point the way here in the 21st century to our removal from our position on the pinnacle of the pyramid of life, end quote.
Interesting.
And Sheehan, by the way, he's also important. He ran he was the counsel for the Jesuit headquarters in Washington, D.C. for a long time, and he's a famous lawyer. He worked on, the Silkwood case, the Iran-Contra affair. I mean, he's got some super high-profile cases on which he was an attorney, so he's no Johnny-come-lately, and he's also a friend of the Jesuits. In fact, he is the priest who, when Jimmy Carter was the president, and Carter wanted to get the secret Vatican files on UFOs, he's the priest that they commissioned who worked through the Jesuit headquarters in Washington, D.C. to try to get those files from the Vatican, and they were flatly denied. They were told they would not see one part of those secret files.
Wow.
And this was the Jesuits making the request from the Vatican for the President of the United States, and they were turned down.
Wow. Jeez. Now, when a new pope will come onto the scene, and we know now that this is going to happen shortly here, and again, most likely Petrus Romanus, which is remarkable, but we'll keep an eye on this. We'll keep watching this, of course. But do you think, Tom, that there will be a revival, if you will, of the Vatican, where this new pope will take a more active role in I don't know, leading the world again? With the ET question is a major part of this, of course, as you've been outlining here so far. But a more, do you suspect we can, at least at the beginning, initial steps, see a more, I don't know, more powerful Vatican, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could happen in a lot of ways. One, if they could somehow get past, if you could have a pope that would come in that would make explicit statements condemning pedophilism, opening an investigation that could be more open than just the internal investigators for the Vatican, and prosecuting, I think they could do some things that could help heal their image in the world. So I think that kind of stuff could happen. But there's something that could be much bigger than that. Some of the theologians for the church that we talk to, they believe that there is a new space faith, and that's what we started calling it, cosmolatry. That's what we started calling it, that ultimately is going to give birth to a new form of Christianity. It'll still be Christianity in their mind, but Christianity, the Copernican-based Christianity that saw the cosmos as the earth at the center of the world, all of that, that's all coming to an end. Christ must be born again, one of them told us. He's got to be reincarnated into a world that's become too different from the ancient one in which he lived. And this all casts very significant light on the new official position of the Vatican, that not believing in aliens and being willing to accept their superior morality and coming new religion is not only paramount to heresy, but it's based on a dying, antiquated belief system. And so imagine you got to, you know, obviously now you got to put your far out cap on, right? But imagine that tomorrow morning we wake up and it's official disclosure, and the Pope is standing in the well of the United Nations with all these other global leaders, and he is saying to the religious world, the Christian world, and you'd have leaders from the Muslim faith and the Hindu faith and like that, but whoever their top recognized individuals are, saying, this is not a problem, our faith can accommodate this, and in fact, this has always been the bigger picture of our faith, not the, you know, fundamentalist, narrow view of Christianity. Well, that church, the Vatican, would suddenly become the focal point, the focus of the entire world, and based purely on their acceptance of these ET benefactors, they could play a role that no other denomination. Who's going to do it? Like the Baptist denomination, somebody's going to say, they don't have the global voice that the Vatican does.
Yeah.
And this could be something that overnight could bring the Vatican back to being the global voice piece for relationship with the eternal God.
And do you see this then? And this is also why I'm suspicious of this, because I think that the Vatican has always held a lot of power, but they've done so covertly. It's just a kind of an illusion, if you will, that they're not really active in current world affairs. I believe they are, but this might be their opportunity and their you know, time, if you will, then to actually, as you say, more openly be engaged and active in this. And this will you know, they will have effectively a front row seat here in global affairs in a completely new way, and they will take that opportunity to do so.
Absolutely. I mean, the Vatican holds sway to over 1 billion followers, but more than that, they influence a great number of people, government, and policies worldwide. In fact, not only could this raise them to a new global profile, I keep going back to, you're going to have to read the documents we were given that say, in fact, acquiescence to extraterrestrial gods is going to be widely and positively received by the masses of the world as a result of the Vatican's astronomers, their professors of fundamental theology, and the new Pope himself accommodating a new ET reality. Here's what Father Giuseppe Tanzelli Nitti, if you look at any of our websites, there's a quote from him on the top of the website where he's talking about how Christianity as we know it today will not need to be immediately renounced, but that once the information that is of a religious nature that comes to us from outside, from beyond the earth, from outside the universe, once it's confirmed, then it's going to mandate a rereading of the gospel. And here's why he says that's going to happen. I'm going to quote this to you. Extraterrestrial life contexts re-propose the intervention of mediators from faraway worlds. Now, he's talking about intervention because the world today is on the wrong path, right?
Yeah.
It's falling apart. Governments are falling apart. Everything's falling apart. The world's coming to its knees. People have an apocalyptic mindset today.
Yeah.
So he's talking about mediators from faraway worlds. And I'm back to the quote now. The delivery of moral messages that awaken in human beings the existential questions that ordinary terrestrial life has made dormant. Moreover, contact with civilizations different from our own is a powerful conceptual place in which the human family returns to wisdom and self-understanding. I'm still quoting. As Paul Davies has intelligently pointed out, the powerful theme of alien beings acting as a conduit to the ultimate, whether it appears in fiction or as a seriously intended cosmological theory, touches a deep chord in the human psyche. The attraction seems to be that by contacting superior beings in the sky, humans will be given access to privileged knowledge, and that the resulting broadening of our horizons will, in some sense, bring us a step closer to God, end quote. So this is one of the very well thought out new Catholic theological papers that I'm reading here, in which Professor Nitti is elaborating on this alien-derived privileged knowledge that is coming our way and that's going to save us all from ourselves. In fact, in this in this doctrinal paper for the Vatican, he goes on, he expresses theologically how upon contact with these highly advanced aliens, the church will have to, here's a quote, quote, will have to conclude that our understanding of revelation until that moment had been largely imprecise and even ambiguous, end quote. Mm. So over and over, and from more than two dozen scholars of the Vatican, of the Catholic Church, their top leaders, their top thinkers, the guys who write their doctrine, to a man who is willing to talk to us, are telling us this is coming. And but to answer your question, I think that this very well thought out answer to extraterrestrial intelligence, in which they are warmly embracing, there's not one of these guys that's raising a red flag. Not one of them saying this could be deception. Every single one of them saying that, in essence, they know the way better than we do. In fact, they go into the Omega Point, New Genesis, stuff that we won't have time to talk about right now, but in which they're really talking about all of us joining more of kind of almost a super global organism. It becomes very, very strange. Benedict himself was a devout mystical holder of this belief system, as we document in this church, in this book. And some of this is, well, what can I say? But all is not lost. A new improved religious revelation based on information acquired from another world is coming, they say. It's even going to involve a strange alien god. And according to prophecy, it's going to be advocated for by a priesthood seated in Rome. And both ancient and modern authorities said that. The considerable downside, in my opinion, is, first of all, to reject the mysterious new gospel and to neglect bowing down before the image that they're talking about, as they're saying that to neglect this is the real heresy. Well, if you study Roman Catholicism, if you study their history, there were times when you didn't want to be depicted as a heretic.
Sure, yeah.
And yet biblical prophecy foresees the re-advent of the Inquisition, a time where you will bow down or you're put to death.
Yeah, wow.
There won't be any place for heretics like Father Funes referred to that reject the papal decree and refuse to accept the alien dogma. It's not going to go unpunished.
And the rulership of these, whatever they are, right? Wow, interesting. This is it's really like childhood's end, actually, if you think about it. It's remarkable. I wanted to ask you this as well, Tom, and I know we're coming up towards the end here in a little bit, but if this is the dawning of, let's say, assume it's the age of the Antichrist, it's as the prophecy of the popes kind of play out, if you will, Rome will be destroyed to a certain degree, and the ET, the aliens, will be brought in, if you will, announced as our saviors, and things will kind of be built up. If that is the case, what do you think timeline-wise we're looking at here? Are we talking a few years ahead? I mean, we talked about 2012 last time you were on the program, and this is more or less accurate because we've had a delay in it. The inception was taking place there in March 2012, as you said, but then we didn't get to know about it until about a year later, a little bit less. But we could be looking at something similar here where there's a kind of a it's going to play out from 2012 and onwards, but it might be a little bit of a delay, if you will, on it. But do you think we could be looking at something like this in the next couple of years here, or what do you think, Tom?
Well, I have several things. One, if you read the book Petrus Romanus, while we pointed to March and April of last year, which turns out covertly to have been exactly when he did resign, more broadly we said we thought this would happen between 2012 and 2013, partly based on the prophecies in the Zohar and other things, understanding that when it comes to the ancient prophets, they didn't use the Gregorian calendar. So,
sure.
So for that very practical reason, we didn't try to nail down 2012, meaning from January to December. Secondly, I've never liked setting dates. What I do is I try to point to what everybody is saying and then raise some big questions around it and say, if they're right, if they're correct, here are particular things this could set in motion. So I could say that if Catholic and Protestant prophets down through time who have pointed to the years 20, and not just 2012, they pointed to the year 2012 as the time in which something would begin.
Right, yeah.
They actually write about its zenith occurring in 2016. And in fact, I'm going to reread, you know, the book Apollyon Rising 2012, that's been my best-selling book ever. I'm going to re-release that book here in the next few months as an enlarged version of that book, and it's going to have a part of the title. It's going to say Apex 2012 or Zenith 20, or excuse me, Apex 2016 or Zenith 2016, to reaffirm that what most of these prophets were talking about was something starting in 2012 that reaches its zenith in 2016. Now, why evangelicals take hold of that is because that's 3.5 years later. So was there something that started in 2012 that actually started the beginning of the Great Tribulation period? And now with the prophecy of the popes, does the false prophet appear? You've got Obama now headed for Israel, the same time during which this conclave is going to be happening in Vatican City. You've got Obama traveling to Israel preaching peace. The Vatican just signed a new agreement with Israel that we also predicted in the book Petrus Romanus. So here's what I would say. I would say that what we do is we analyze stuff, and that includes the esoteric and the political, and then we try to kind of point at what it might be becoming. But we're not prophets, and we don't set dates. I don't think it's wise to do that, and it's been proven.
Yep.
You know, Harold Camping, I think, last year before, showed us again why it's probably not a good idea to set dates for certain things to happen. So that's really the only way I can answer your question. All I can say is we were right in Petrus Romanus about the dates that we speculated about. We were right in ways that basically raised the hair on the back of my neck. Part of this, though, is not to our credit. It's simply us studying what other greater minds, like René Thibault, the Jesuit priest 61 years ago, who wrote The Mysterious Prophecy of the Popes in French. And then he died, and the book fell into obscurity. Nobody even knew it even existed until we found it and translated it into English. And his work is astonishing. And by the way, not only did he predict when the final Pope's timing would come as 2012 or to 2013, He uncovered anagrams that are in the Prophecy of the Popes that the world doesn't talk about. We unflesh a lot of this in the book Petrus Romanus. He shows, for instance, anagrams as seen in the Latin text, for instance, Peregrinus Apostolicus. That's the prophecy for the 96th pope on the list of the Prophecy of the Popes, Pius the VI. That anagram not only reveals the papal name, it does it twice. If you take Peregrinus Apostolicus, it literally, P-I-U-S, and then in Apostolicus, P-I-U-S, it appears twice so that you have the name Pius transparently embedded hundreds of years ahead of time in the original Latin text that predicted what the name of that pope was going to be 200 years before Pope Pius VI was elected. Then he decrypts a couplet called Apostolic Pilgrim that signified that both Pius the VI and the next pope, Pius the VII, would be forced into foreign exile as pilgrims, which in fact they were. But why is that important? Because more fascinatingly, he suggests that that repetition serves as a poetic refrain for the last pope. In other words, Pius is similar to the binary Mayday, Mayday that sailors cry out.
Yeah.
And we're not going to have time to talk about that, but that takes you to the electrifying visions of another pope named Pius X, and he served as the pope in the 1900s that saw his papal successor, called by his same name, carrying the name Pius, fleeing Rome over the bodies of dead priests at the outset of the end times, at the time when the final pope, Petrus Romanus, would appear. So what I'm saying is, all we've done, all I've done and Putnam has done, is spend a year at a time in intense investigative research with a half dozen people poring over ancient documents to try to find if there is, in fact, something legitimately hidden in these ancient esoteric texts that are pointing to a specific period of time in which they believed that the end time would come, the false prophet would appear, the Antichrist would arise, and the end times, as known in the Bible, would unfold. And one of the things that we found, some people have criticized me because I'm an evangelical, and they said, why are you quoting Catholic prophecies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't just Catholics. Turn of the century evangelical Protestants, more than two dozen of them we found, who pointed to something starting in the year 2012 that will end in the year 2016. They said this is when the false prophet would appear, the Antichrist would appear, and several of them said at the same time the city of Rome would be destroyed. And their language is almost identical to the prophecy of the popes. This is from the 1700s to the 1800s, and it includes famous preachers like Jonathan Edwards, who wrote in their own papers how that this would happen between the year 2012 and 2016. So what did all these people see? That's really what interests me. I don't want to set dates, but what I am talking about what was there behind them, in other words? What was behind the inspiration of pagans, Mayans, and Baptists? Right?
Yep.
And Catholics. And isn't it astonishing that 61 years ago, Tebow said he would retire in March or April, and he did.
Yeah, wow.
And in our book, we said, look for this to happen between 2012 and 2013 based on the Zohar, and it has. So all I can say, folks, is so far we're batting some very, very high averages here, and if it indeed does point to the arrival, if the final pontiff, if Petrus Romanus is the false prophet, then we know what days we're living in. And what I would say is you better make sure that you do what you can to prepare now for what could be coming.
Blueprint or prophecy? That is the question. It's a fascinating story, this one, Tom, and we have to stay in contact and see how this unfolds, of course. Have you back at some point at a later date when the saga continues to unfold? But before we wrap up, I just want to say again here that the book, of course, you guys out there should check out right now if you want to find out more, is The Final Pope Is Here, Petrus Romanus. Again, fascinating story. And the new upcoming book, as Thomas mentioned, Exo Vaticana, and will be out shortly. The website where you can follow Tom more closely is RaidersNewsUpdate.com. And if there's anything else, Tom, you want to leave us with the other websites or additional closing words, please go ahead and do so.
Just to say, Henrik, thank you very much for having me on your program. I know that you accommodated an awful lot of people like me who come in with strange worldviews, and we appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much for your time today, Tom. We will let you go, but keep up the good work.
Okay, Henrik. Talk to you again.
Well, there you have it. Interesting as usual. Who knows what is going to happen? Anything is possible, and we'll keep an eye on it, of course. Thank you for listening today. We appreciate your interest and for staying with us as a member. Next up, Richard Hoagland on his trip to Mexico. He brought the Accutron torsion measuring instrument, and he did readings at the Temple of Kukulkan in the Yucatan on the 21st of December 2012. And we're going to talk about this and his consequent arrest there. Later, we have Dan Johnson on the NDAA, Greg Braden, Josh Reeves, and Suzanne Posel, to name a few. But we'll be back soon. Talk to you then. Take care.